Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 31st, 2020. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Scott, what's wrong with Dan Negreanu?
There's something going on there.
Something's not right. He's upset about something. Something's going wrong in his life somewhere. And I'm legitimately, genuinely concerned for him. I really am.
Yeah.
You know. But anyway, you know, you always read the news item, but I'm just gonna read it real quick because I'm talking about him. Twitch suspended his account after he went on his profanity-laced tirade, where he threatened a commenter who said some disparaging remarks about his wife, Amanda Leatherman. And it's not known how long he's going to have this account suspended or even, you know, whatever. But one of the things that, I mean, obviously we saw about the other thing that happened during the online World Series thing, and he lost it when he lost his connection and all that. But the quote that he had in there, it's really bad. It was really bad what he said to the guy. And I don't know what the guy said. I didn't really investigate any further what he said about his wife, and I'm sure it was terrible. And but what has me really concerned is that what if the guy that he said it to takes him up on his offer? And what he said in this,
Goes up. Yep. Yeah,
a little back and forth was, and I always love reading stuff like this every once in a while because it helps me learn the lingo of the kids these days. Even though he's the same age as me, practically. But he said, come effing step to me. Step to me. Never heard of that before. Is that an old thing getting revived, or is that a new thing I never heard of? I don't know.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that you looked it up and you were going to educate me.
But... No, I step to me.
I don't know either.
And then say that, and I will knock you the F out. How about that? I'm not effing around. I will break your effing teeth if you come step to me. It sounds like a song, doesn't it? Like from the 50s, you know?
Like Green Day, maybe.
Bow, 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 bow. All right, sorry. So he says, I'll feed them to you anally. How about that? Now, first of all, can you be fed something anally? I guess you can in the sense that, like, you could feed, like a machine or something, like, you know, or whatever. So I guess you could just put something in there as long as there's a location to put it. I guess you could feed it. But it just sounds pretty gross. Now, I don't want to say anything too disparaging about this because he might offer to feed me things anally. I don't know. But I'm just saying, I mean, he's not a big guy. You know what I mean?
That was the first thing that came to mind. And that doesn't mean that you don't get skills, just because of your size. Right. But,
right.
You know, it did strike me as the, Chihuahua barking at me at the park when the Great Dane sits there and just smiles.
Exactly.
Right? You know, all right. So, yeah, you're right. You said a lot of things that I was thinking. The other thing that bothers me about this is, you know, not the first time we've talked about this, and it's not a shock to anybody out there, but social media sucks.
Yeah.
And I know Twitch is not really social media, I guess, but it is in the sense that, you know, you're communicating.
There's
with
a
people.
Communication, yeah.
Behind your keyboard, right?
Yeah.
And you feel more empowered to say stuff that hopefully you wouldn't say in person, but at these days, who knows? I'm beginning to lose all faith in folks anyhow. I think they probably would say the same stuff in person. So there is an issue of that that does bother me. You know, we running this Facebook group here in our city, and we finally had to put the hammer down on and start moderating and kicking people out, and it's horrible. It's just horrible. Yeah. It's not the waste of time and being, you know, a parent or a big brother or whatever you want to call it to these people. It's just horrible that people just can't be respectful. People say nice, and you don't have to be nice. I mean, the world's messed up right now, and you don't need to be nice. You just need to be respectful. And obviously this guy that went off, that set him off, was not respectful. And then, you know, the reaction is not respectful. So that's what really kind of bothers me. I think it's just more of this, you know, I'm still having conversation. I mean, it's almost August now, right?
Yeah.
We're still having conversations, with people about just how, when you're cooped up, how much time people have, and they're cooped up at home, and it just makes people angry. It does. And that's what's not stopping. And, you know, we got all this other stuff we could talk about, that's hard. But I think we're at a time now where I think people need to be more respectful, more nice than they usually are to help people through this. And we're seeing the exact opposite. We're seeing people just get angry over everything and elevate it to a level that just it doesn't need to be, you know. I don't know if you saw the meme about the potato and someone said this is a tomato.
Oh no.
It's your fight. People fight on Facebook about anything. So. it's so true. Like, it's just people just get online every day and just look for fights. And you know, sadly, I think that's the case for both of the people involved here. But
it's term stir crazy. You know, it was invented for a reason.
People
started to go a little batty. And you know, the other thing you talked about, too, is even if he had skills or he could fight, you know, people have weapons. You know, I mean, he's a little guy, and Negrano's a bigger guy, and he can still beat the guy up. He can just show up and say, you know, and then Negrano comes at him, and then he's, you know, standing his ground or some crap like that. Who knows? But, I mean, it's just to just openly threaten people like that. I understand, but it's some mindless, nameless, faceless person randomly putting something on the internet, and he just went off on it. And, you know, regardless of what he said, you know, it doesn't matter what he said. You know, I mean, you've put yourself in a situation where something really terrible could happen instead of some anonymous random comment typed into a chat that means nothing to anybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just not something's wrong there, and I feel bad. I hope he's okay.
Well, and I also think that people are lacking an understanding of the repercussions of what they say or do online.
Yeah.
In the middle of the, I mean, I think they always have, but it's been, as we said, it's been worse during this, right? So, you know, two things come to mind. One, there was a person in the county north of us that was arrested by the sheriff's office for making a threat online. And in the article, it said, hey, I was joking. It got out of hand. And the sheriff's like, I ain't jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
You're done with us. And I want to believe that guy feels a tremendous amount of remorse for just losing comprehension of what he was saying and thinking it was funny and it really wasn't, right?
Yeah.
And then I was talking to a friend of mine, too, and he's like, you know, do these people understand that their names and photos are attached to some of this stuff and that their employers might be out there watching and deciding this is not somebody we want at our company? So, you know, we can get into these arguments about the First Amendment, but the First Amendment doesn't protect your right to keep your job when you say something
right
wrong. So... to anybody that's listening, I'm like, you just need to ratchet it down, not because it's right or wrong, but just because there's a repercussions out there that you may not be thinking about. And I definitely thankful every day that our Antioch fans group, I know it's not huge, 400 or 500 people in there, but we've never had those troubles in there yet, right?
No.
Now I know it's poker, but you know that stuff happens everywhere. Though I mean, all these Facebook groups I'm a member of, there's always an administrator. Come on, folks, this is disapproving cats. No more dog photos. How many times do I have to tell you? It just happens everywhere, right? And it just—I don't remember us ever having a problem in the Antioch fans group. So thank you to everybody that's participated in that and participated there respectfully. So.
Oh, plus they live in fear; they know that will bring out the banhammer. Smite him. So
Yeah, before we move on to the next item, too, I do want to add a little funny story since we're talking about our fans. You know, you had a little Facebook memory thing on your Facebook.
Yeah.
And I hadn't ever really scrolled through those for the most part. But obviously, you know, it's boring now, and Facebook seems to keep pushing it to me every day. So today I went through them. And had one for 9 years ago, Chris. And it said, a call I received today from an Antia Poker Cruise passenger. Hey, I won one of your poker cruises, but unfortunately I've got a permit to kill an alligator that week. Just made me miss both cruising and more our passengers.
See, this is all the stuff I missed when I wasn't on Facebook 9 years ago. Right. I should have been on sooner.
And a couple last week was our great debut on Hoarding Buried Alive that your stepson found, right?
Wait, what? Oh yeah, the magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I couldn't believe he saw that. I mean, it was like the sliver of the screen at the top.
Yeah.
I mean, you had to really look for it, and he saw it. He's like, "Hey, I saw your magazine on TV." I'm like, "What? That was what, 6 years ago? No, 5 years ago, something like that."
Yeah, it's at least that now.
Yeah.
He eats his carrots because that's some Bugs Bunny level vision.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoy those things. Those memories. I literally stay up to midnight with one eye open just to see it turn to the next day, see the memories, and then go to sleep.
Well, it is interesting both to see what I thought was funny 5, 6, 10 years ago, and then I'm like, man, I can't believe I posted that crap, or, oh my God, that's funny.
I know. I mean, what I do is, what I like most about it is, like, when we post our trips, you know, I get to relive, you know, the trips and stuff, and now it kind of bums me out right now, because we can't go anywhere or anything, or do anything, and we're penniless now, but other than that, you know, it's fantastic. All right, let's launch into some more depressing news.
Yeah, let's just keep the therapist in the business here. A charred body discovered in a Michigan park this month has been identified as poker pro Susie Q Zhao. Police say they are treating the death as a homicide and haven't ruled out it being connected to her profession.
Yeah, that's sad. I mean, that's unbelievable. You know what I mean? For a way to go, too, you know. Unbelievable. I don't really recall this player from like any of the things that we've talked about on the show before, but
yeah,
sounds familiar. The nickname sounds familiar.
Didn't want to depress the show with it, but you insisted this week. No, but you mentioned it, and so I'm like, it is, because people are talking about it. But so I looked in some of the. I think she has had about 250,000 in winnings on the Hendon Mob, so more of a kind of a local pro, but effusive praise over who she was and how she conducted her life and everything like that. So obviously it was a special person that unfortunately a horrible early end to the life. So you know, I hope at the end of the day, I mean, I know they said they haven't ruled it out, but I hope eventually they're able to rule that out, because that would be even more sad if it had something to do with her poker playing.
Yeah, that's just. I mean, it's you're toeing the line there, saying you can't rule it out, because they can't. They can't rule anything out in the beginning of an investigation, and it just sounds, you know, like that's something they have to say. But sometimes you can read into that and you think, oh no, I never thought about that. Wow, poker playing is dangerous, you know. And then I'll, you know, so I'm not going to take it that far with it, but I feel just terrible, you know. And then the other thing too is, you know, Michigan poker is hardly ever in the news. You know what I mean? You don't really hear that much about it. A lot of times it's because the casinos themselves are really tight-lipped with their information and stuff, but to hear about a Michigan player have something like this happen to her is just sad, very sad. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like, I know we knew about this before, but, you know, we got to talk about everything that's happening in the poker world, especially now when we don't have much to talk about. So,
well, yeah, and sometimes it's, you just need another week to see the news pick up with it, right, and see how many people are talking about it before you realize it's something worth us talking about on the show. So,
well, not only that, but how do we know that she didn't threaten somebody online to feed them their teeth anally, and this is what happened to her?
Exactly. Yep.
Right?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, this is what I'm saying about Negreanu. How do you know you're not going to turn up dead someday because some guy made this stupid comment, and now he gets killed, you know, for some stupid thing. So, You just never know. You got to be careful. This is not your mom and dad's world. You know what I mean? This is a different world.
It absolutely is now. So, I've even got to the point where I'm like, not that I was always one of those barkers out the windows in traffic, but I can let myself get a little heated when somebody's not driving properly, right?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, that's one of the things I've changed. Not that I'm out there driving a lot right now, but I'm like, we're just in a situation now where people get triggered really easily. So, I'm gonna let that guy that cut me off go and not worry about it.
Yeah, Gene's brother has lived in Florida longer than us. He's been here like a good 10, 15 years longer than us at least. And when we moved here in 95, 96, he said, hey, I want to tell you something. I'm like, what? He says, you know how different, like, areas or regions of the country or of the world have different meanings for different things? And I'm like, yeah. He says, well, you know what giving the finger means? And I'm like, yeah, it means, screw you or, whatever. And he's like, well, not in Florida. In Florida, it means shoot me, please.
Yeah.
And that's what he told me. That was 20, 5 years ago or whatever. So, you just, things aren't the same. Back in the day, you can get away with giving somebody the finger and they would just like, oh, whatever. Now they might shoot you for it.
Yep.
So you got to be careful, man. Got to be careful.
All right. An appeals court will take a look at a lawsuit a poker player filed over prize money that was dismissed by a lower court. Michael Bandler said he played in a tournament series at the Gold Nugget in Atlantic City in 2015 that advertised $150,000 in prize money. One of the events Bandler entered was canceled because of low turnout. The Gold Nugget argued that the advertising never said the prize pool was guaranteed and also said that it could cancel tournaments at any time for any reason, and also that casino advertising is governed by state gaming regulators and not consumer fraud laws.
I have a feeling you're going to have a lot to say about this, but I don't know. In my estimation, this is always what made me nervous about the ads that we would get sometimes for the magazine, because I always wondered if somebody's going to push them on this, because sometimes they would list it and not even say anything. They would just put a number up there, and I'm like, well, it doesn't say guarantee. Or they would say guarantee, but then they say based on these number of entrants, and it's like I always wondered if someone's willing to actually hire a lawyer and push it when somebody advertises something and doesn't, make it absolutely perfectly clear what it means.
The answer to your question is yes, Chris. Somebody did.
I know.
And oddly, I don't remember this when it was first filed, so I don't know. Maybe it just didn't get the press coverage that the appeal is getting on it. But a couple things, obviously. One, my concern with those kind of advertisements is I always shuddered a little bit because I don't think for our sake, but for the casino's sake, that, there is a perception and a reality, right? So, if you have a good lawyer, you can talk your way out of the perception and focus on the reality. And it sounds like kind of what Gold Nugget kind of argued there, right?
Right.
But the perception is when you put a $150,000 in prize money in big letters on any kind of promotion, whether it's a magazine ad or a mailer or marquee or whatever, the assumption that people are going to make is that's a guarantee.
Right.
Now, you could put an asterisk on it all you want. You can put what you just said that some people do, based on X number of players. You can do all this other small print verbiage that's always in structure sheets and things like that. But at the end of the day, that's just the world we're in. There are so many guarantees. Well, world we were in. I don't know what world we're in not right now, but when people see it, almost all the time, that is a guarantee. So if you're not willing to guarantee it, you probably should not put a number there just to avoid any confusion. So yep. I don't know if that makes it right or wrong in the legal sense, but in an avoidance of illegal sense, and not getting your customers upset sense, that's probably a smart way to go. So either be strong enough to guarantee it or strong enough not to throw that number around.
I agree. I mean, even when we were putting out a magazine way back in, the 1800s, I think?
Yeah, it seems like that.
The last issue we put out. When we used to get the information from our writers, sometimes they would say, this tournament will pay $40,000 based on X amount. And I'm like, Well, it'll pay $6 billion based on, you know what I mean? If it's based on, you know, 45 trillion entries, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to even say it. You're asking for trouble, and it's just a silly what if kind of thing anyway. So I try to root those out whenever I can. Sometimes they get by me, but in the ads, I want to so badly call them and say, hey, you really shouldn't put this in your ad because one, it's worthless. Two, you're asking for trouble, you know, but at the same time, it's like, it takes them forever to get us the ad. Yeah. So I don't want to have them remake it and then not get in the magazine. So I'm like, hey, this is your ad. You know, you're responsible for it. So, but yeah, just putting a number on there. And I'm surprised, like you said, 5 years has been since this guy had this tournament, you know, and now or was in this tournament and now still in appeals court. So from there, now if they want to push it, what after that is it? It's not Supreme. Is it Supreme State or is it Supreme?
I don't know where it goes.
I wonder where it would go after that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that story. It's remarkable. I still don't think he's going to win. I think ultimately, when it gets to that right down to it, he won't win. But yeah, just be clear. That's all there is to it.
He admitted in the lawsuit that he didn't see the rules anywhere. Which if I'm putting out rules and you don't choose to see them, it's kind of tough for me to swallow that it's my fault that you did. Right. So, but there is a lot of interesting stuff in here. So we'll see. So part of the thing was that it was frustrating to me because, again, I don't remember this from 5 years ago. And all the initial articles I was reading about it were saying they were making it sound like it was a tournament and then they canceled it, but they paid him out a small fee. Which doesn't make sense at all, right?
No, not at all.
You're not. So I couldn't figure out what was going on. And then so I found the actual appeal, and it said the same thing. So the journalists were just copying and pasting out of the same thing. So I was trying to figure out what it was. So it took me a while before I could find a news article that actually explained that it was what I thought it was, a series. And they canceled one or more events in the series. But very frustrating out there and confusing to folks as well, too. But just a good reminder to be as clear and direct as possible in everything you do in terms of putting numbers and ads and writing and talking about this stuff so people can understand it.
Yeah.
All right, a team of Facebook researchers say an algorithm called Rebel that they have developed does better at playing heads-up, no-limit hold'em against live players than the Libratus algorithm that previously made headlines. The researchers say they've added reinforcement learning to the algorithm, which essentially teaches the computer how to play while it plays, making decisions based on imperfect information a little closer to perfect.
First, I have two things to say. One, is it Rebel or Rebel? I don't know, because they capitalized the B in the article.
Because the
B stood for some sort of noun or whatever. So, but it's funny, it's like, is it Rebel or is it Rebel? I don't know. But really, the most important thing is, shouldn't Facebook really be investing its time and money in more important things? Such as, I don't know, stopping the spread of conspiracy theory videos and fake accounts? Do they really need to make AI for
a million people saw it?
I mean, seriously.
Well, but, you know, again, one, this was an article in VentureBeat.com, which I hadn't read before, but and it was horribly hard to understand. It did mention that, again, as we've said with all these other computer programs, these folks aren't just teaching computers to play poker. They are teaching them to make decisions that they can use in other applications.
But why is it always hold'em? Why are they always picking up hold'em as the go-to thing to test their AI?
Well, I mean, do you have a different game that you prefer?
Yeah. How about watching videos and seeing if they're real or fake and determining it by learning from them? There you go. Learn from your mistakes by putting any stupid videos on Facebook and creating these stupid accounts to try to win elections for people. Yeah. Maybe the AI could focus on that. There you go. There's your game.
Maybe that's the second step.
Get on it, Facebook.
I did find it interesting, though, because, you know, as we did talk about on these previous ones, these previous computers, I mean, you're taking when you're talking about limit poker, it's a different story. And some other things like that, where you're essentially teaching them a game, like backgammon is a better example, right? Yeah. It's a solvable game, right? So it's pretty easy to teach a computer how to make the perfect decision in every step of the way. But as we all know in poker, there's that imperfect information. You know, there's things that are missing there. So that's always a problem for a computer when you don't have when you have missing information, right? Yeah. It's when you get what was those old error codes? Oh man, I don't got to think about that. You used to love those when I get those, like what? Then you go back to like line 47 on your basic thing, like, oh, I forgot to put the close print there. Yeah. But to be able to teach it to, you know, play, I mean, it really sounds like war games kind of stuff, right? You know?
Yeah.
You know, like thermonuclear war and, you know, like, you know, it's like, all right, it's you need to learn this as you go and you keep learning and getting smarter and smarter. So it's a little bit above my pay grade, but it's fascinating to me and also fascinatingly scary to me.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's just it's hilarious that Nolan and Holdem seems to be the go-to for all these guys to prove who's making the smarter computer. You know, it's weird.
Well, I think it's also because you can be able to test it, right? So, I mean, it's a game where there are lots of pros that you can, you know, pay to come play against the computer versus some other stuff where the pool of live people is a little smaller.
Yeah.
I thought the other thing that was interesting, too, is that they didn't want to test this on Facebook because they didn't want people to use it for cheating in poker.
Right.
So when they did their announcement, they did some other kind of game that's, I guess, not online or you don't play for money or something like that. So also an interesting thing as well, too. So
yeah.
All right. Here's this week's brief update on casinos and poker room reopenings, reclosings in Nevada. Don Laughlin's Riverside Resort has, and this is perfect for you, Chris.
Yeah.
And when adding the reclosings in, right?
Yeah.
Don Laughlin's Riverside Resort has reopened its poker room after closing it after reopening it.
We're not going to be able to keep track of these pretty soon.
So yeah, if that doesn't make sense to you, they opened, and then for whatever reason, they closed down all their table games, including their poker room, and then now they've reopened table games in the poker room. So
that's it's like the poker theory of levels, you know? He doesn't know that I know that he knows that I wouldn't raise in this spot, but same thing. I wouldn't close my room in this environment.
Oh, man.
Jeez.
All right. Remember that antiupmagazine.com/reopen lists verified details on casino and poker room reopenings and reclosings. If you have updates, email us at editor@antiupmagazine.com. And we are also emailing a weekly e-blast with updates that you can subscribe to on the homepage of antiupmagazine.com.
Speaking of updates, Papes, the Antiup fans' free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how you can join can be found at bit.ly/papes, P-A-I-P-S. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th every month and rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. Poker Stars gives you 15,000 free chips every 4 hours, if you want them. Join the Antiup Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call to floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Antiup logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop. To buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Antiup Magazine, Antiup Pokercast, Antiup Poker Tour logos. And it's another sale this week through Friday. Now we're recording on Thursday, but if you get it earlier, get on this day, and you can go and pick up something. And if you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or call to floor submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post in the Antiup Fans group on Facebook. Each week, we spotlight a listener who emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If they haven't won something from us in the past year, give them something cool, just like we do with Call to Floor and Hand of the Week. Ed Locke says, I decided to play a World Series of Poker online event, rented a room, stayed there the whole weekend. I'm in cash, cool, put in the cash out. Oh, to cash out, you need to upload a bank statement and voided check first. Okay. So now we need to verify how you deposited the money in the first place. Okay, PayPal, here you go. Oh, this is your wife's account. Yeah, and it's an account and the money comes from the same place that's on the check, but it's not your name. That's a violation of terms. What? It's a clerical error at worst. We will have crisis management contact you in 2 days. 2 days go by, he calls again. You need to upload documents. I did. When? 2 days ago. I'll have to review and email you. Wait, just review now? I have to review and get back to you. Good day, sir. It feels like you are trying to get me off the phone. No, I just need the review now. Good day, sir. Took 2 weeks, but they paid. It is a cautionary tale. Don't have your friend deposit or your backer or your brother. You need to be the one to deposit. make sure your PayPal has your name, address on it, and matches exactly what it is on the World Series of Poker account, or you aren't getting your money.
Wow, what a little window into the world of what's going on out there.
Yes. That's that right there was worth the price of admission today. that little story. That's some great information, because clearly you have players who play at that level and want to play. And wow. Yeah, that's... Wow. That's some of the stuff that, you know, we were afraid... Like, that was kind of... That's kind of the hoop jumping through that we had to do when they started closing up all those electronic wallets that we were using back in the day.
Yeah, right?
And that's what it just reminds me of. And this was supposed to be... This is just legit illegal stuff, you know? Yeah. There's nothing wrong with what he's doing.
Yeah, yeah. I remember back when you had to upload your driver's license, and it probably still sites that still make you do that. And, you know, we're in this world now where people don't want to share any information. But, you know, wow. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, so I guess the cautionary tale is before you go out there to play, you know, spend some time really researching how you fund your account and how you get paid out so you can avoid all this. And Ed certainly gave you some pointers on what not to do. So
exactly. Hey, we could complete O'Malley's move today. Here comes part one. We'll see you on the other side.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated in a $1, $2, no-limit hold'em casino cash game in our regular casino. The max buy-in here is $500, but we bought in for $400. We put our name on the 2-5 list, which was about a mile long, and are still waiting for a seat to open up 4 hours later. We are not that concerned about it, as we've been getting hit in the head with the deck. We've more than tripled our starting stack and sit with $1,500. The blinds post, the under the gun limps in, it's folded to the cutoff who makes the table standard raise to $10. This player has been a little wild, but doesn't get too crazy. He's a pretty solid player, seems to understand the game well, has shown a variety of bluffs and nut hands, and sat down at the table about an hour after us. He's built himself up a nice stack as well. He bought in for $500 and currently sits with $1,200. He's also waiting for a 2-5 seat. The hijack folds, and it's on us with the button, and we look down at the 6 of spades, 5 of spades. I think folding this hand to a cutoff raise to this type of player would be way too weak. We've got a chance to stack a possible big pair, and we will have position the entire hand. Plus, if we get the right flop, we can turn in a huge payday before moving to the 2-5 game. I think a raise is a decent play here, but ultimately, we decide to call. We can't pull the trigger and would like to see what the flop brings. The big blind and under the gun come along as well. There's roughly $40 in the pot, and the flop is the 9 of spades, 8 of spades, 7 of diamonds. I really couldn't have asked for a better flop. We flopped the 9 high straight, sure it's the third nuts, but we have a straight flush draw to go along with it. The big blind and under the gun check, and surprisingly so does the cutoff. This is odd. If he'd played a hand like aces or kings, he could be scared of a check raise or that I would come over the top and put him in a tough position on such a coordinated board. If he's got anything bigger than that, does he really want to risk me just checking behind and going to the turn on such a dangerous board? I'd like to get value for this hand, and with 3 opponents to act behind me, one is bound to call. We make it $25 to go. The big blind and under the gun fold, but the cutoff calls. Can we range him here? With roughly $90 in the pot, the turn is the ace of clubs. I really like this card, and what's better is our opponent perked up when he saw it hit the felt. He checks his cards and then checks his option. Interesting. If he had something like ace-king of spades or ace-queen of spades, we're in great shape here. We blocked 2 of the spades that could give him the win on the river, and we're way ahead right now to a hand that is probably going to the mat with this. I'm going to make a bet that makes it seem like we want to try to push him off his hand. We make it $100 to go and slam it in the middle, showing strength to convey weakness. Our opponent thinks briefly before sliding a stack of $100 into the middle. There's now $290 in the pot, and the river is the deuce of hearts. A complete blank. Once again, our opponent checks. We've got to get value for this hand right now, but I don't want to scare him off. I'll be thrilled if we get 3 streets of value out of him. We're going to bet again, but this time just over one-third of the pot. We make it $100 to go. Our opponent thinks for a short amount of time before announcing a raise and sliding an extra $400 into the middle, $500 total. So, it's $400 more to us. We've got about $1,265 in front of us. Meanwhile, after the $400 raise, he's sitting with about $565 left in his stack. Are we good here? What's the move?
All right, players love to play Jack 10, which is the only hand we are scared of here. But would a solid, though slightly wild, player raise from the cutoff with Jack 10 when there was an under-the-gun limper? Possibly, but I'm skeptical of that here. That being said, the chances of it being possible outweigh my need to get even more value out of this hand, so I'm just going to call.
Oh, never calling here. I'm aware that we only lose... I'm aware that we only lose to the plausible hand of Jack 10. 10-6 isn't plausible here. But we bet it the whole way. So to me, no one check raises us on the river without having us beat here. I'm folding every day and twice on Sunday. So here it comes, part two.
Hello again. We've seen this player bluff, but we've also seen him turn over nut hands. I could make a hero fold here, since I rarely see players check raise in 1-2 on the river, and when they do, they almost always have it. But let's analyze our current situation. Two hands beat us, Jack 10 and 10-6. This player would not have raised preflop with an under-the-gun limper holding 10-6. What other hands make sense? I don't think he plays the flop with 9s, 8s, or 7s the way he did. He'd want to protect his set from any draws. This could be something like pocket aces, where he turned a set and pretty much thinks he's good. I doubt he's turned kings into a bluff. Since we can rule out 10-6 and we beat aces, ace-king, or ace-queen of spades, I can't just fold to one specific hand, even though there are 16 combinations of that hand. I think he'd only raise preflop with a suited Jack-10, and that takes us down to 4 specific combinations. This could very easily be something like ace-king of spades, ace-queen of spades, or aces. I get ready to say those magical words, but something stops me. I've seen this movie before. I thought there's no way an opponent could have the only hand that beats me, only to see them snap call and be stacking my chips before I even knew what hit me. But I can't fold. I call. I have a straight, I say. Are we chopping then? He asks. My heart sinks as our opponent turns over the Jack of Spades, Ten of Spades. We got played. We were drawing dead from the flop. Not even the Seven of Spades would have helped us. Although I am glad we showed some restraint by calling rather than shoving. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes you just can't find a fold, but you still avert disaster by not making an even bigger mistake. Perhaps I'm growing as a player. Nah. I hope to see you on the felt.
Yeah, there was no chance of me raising here. No shame in folding, which would have saved us some money. But I still think the call is defensible here.
I wrote here in a little spell of cockiness, it's hard work being right all the time. And of course, I'm joking. I suck at poker. My 12-year-old grandson beats me now. So, but yeah, I just couldn't see somebody making that move there that didn't have his beat. So I had to fold. But
well, yeah, I would say it's always difficult when it's the one hand that really has you beat, and that's what your opponent turns over, right? So it's really difficult to talk yourself out of making that call because it's only the one hand. But if that one hand is super possible, then it's a different story. Yeah. I tend to do better with that in limit than I do in no limit. In limit, I'm able to get that one last bet on the river and look at it, and I'm like, there's just no possible way that bet is going in if it doesn't. He doesn't have the one exact hand that has me beat, and then I can fold there, which is so odd that I struggle with that in no limit. Then
but. It's funny because here you call $400. Raise, right. But you won't call one bet in limit.
One $16 bet.
Exactly. That's hilarious.
Yeah. No, it is. It's just how our brains are wired, I think.
Yeah, so. I think we found your glitch.
Yeah.
Let's work on that for you.
Because those Facebook researchers work in front of me.
Well, that reminds me, before we move on, I'm watching this show that ran a few years back, or a couple years back. It's called Mr. Robot.
Oh yeah, yeah, with Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, and Christian Slater. But like, and it's funny because he talks in all these computer terms throughout the show, and there's like this one episode where he's like, I gotta find my glitch or whatever it is, and I think we just found yours. So, but like, I'm so desperate to binge watch all these different shows now to just fill the time at night. So that's what I'm watching now. I highly recommend that show to anybody who hasn't seen it.
No, everybody says it's fantastic. Yeah. I, of course, am binge-watching baseball for the next 4 days until they shut the season down. So,
which is coming. That, probably by the time the show posts, it's probably going to cancel
then
the season.
I'll go back to Netflix. So. All right, it's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antietmagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. And today, it's this is going to be a lot of pressure on us, Chris.
Okay.
This is a hand of the week from one of our Antia Poker Tour champions.
Ooh.
In Valley a couple years ago, Jamie Heltke.
Oh, yeah. So,
you know, usually we just assume that everybody's better at this poker than we are when we do this. We have verifiable proof that Jamie is better than we are.
Yes, so, yes.
So, all right. Now he sets this up as the most interesting hand he can remember being involved in. Wow. And he says, day 1B, this is the world, it's from a World Series of Poker Circuit main event, also at Thunder Valley, from this past January. It's a day 1B, shortly after the dinner break, I get moved to a new table. I'm likely the biggest stack in the room with about 270,000 in chips. With blinds at 1,000, 1,500 with a 1,500 big blind ante. Immediately, the player to my right says something like, here comes Mr. Aggressive, which is sort of a silly thing to say, as I don't think I've ever played with him, and he shouldn't have any idea how I play. He's an older gentleman, and after the first few hands, I see it's clear that he's a recreational player who likes to chat, see a ton of flops, and have a lot of fun. I quickly win one hand when he reluctantly folds to my value bet on the flop. He has about 130,000 in chips. I also hear some table chatter that the player to my left has been very tight and patient, and he has only about 30K. I'm going to pause here just to say this is – it's always interesting when you have a player that's kind of accomplished, as Jamie is here, mm-hmm. talking about the stuff that he notices before he even gets into a hand, right? So the table chatter, you know?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's so important. I mean, there's some other pros that we've talked to that say that's, you know, when they sit down at the table, not only do they check out your stack sizes around and make sure they know who can hurt you and who can't, but they're listening. And they might have those headsets in, but they're listening to what everybody's saying and looking for clues. So, all right. He says, the hand in question now begins the first time that I'm the big blind at this table. Player to my left, who's under the gun, raises a fairly standard open of a little over 3,000. This looks pretty darn strong to me based on his position, chip stack size, and the table chatter. Player to my right calls from the small blind, and we look down at 7-7 in the big blind.
Whenever I... Now, again, he's way better than we are. So, but whenever I join a table that I don't know anything about, I kind of like to revert to ABC for a little bit at least, to try to figure it out. And so when I'm saying to myself, somebody has raised, right? I'm assuming that's what we said here, right? Yeah. So
under gun
raiser. Yeah, an under the gun raiser raises. Generally, I like to give that guy credit, that player credit, for something that a regular player would do. Because let's face it, not every single person in the field is a pro who would be crazy and play against norms and stuff. So what I'm assuming is, this under-the-gun player could have aces, kings, queens, ace-king. That's what I'm thinking right away, because I have to feel that way right away. Now, I'm not saying I'm married to it, but ace-king, usually ace-king suited, if they're under the gun and they're willing to put in some money in a big event like this, they generally have to have a pretty strong hand. So, given that, and I have sevens, and there's a caller, now, we don't know how this caller plays, right? But, I think, did we say this caller was the guy who made the comment?
Yes.
Yeah.
The small blind is the recreational player.
All right. He's the person that said that comment. So we don't know how this guy plays. He could be like, you know, tricky or whatever. But he just calling, knowing he's going to be out of position, he might be tricky with a big hand too. So I'm really looking for a set mining opportunity here. I'm not looking to raise again and then watch this guy come over the top, one of them come over the top of us, and then I just wasted money for no reason when I've been seeing the flop. So I'm just going to call.
Yeah, that's exactly, I think, the right thing. You're being cautious. You got a chance to stack one, if not two people, if you hit a set here. It was really a min raise. It's just a little bit more than a min raise. So let's see what happens and hope fortune is on our side.
Yeah.
All right, here it says, normally I'd love to raise and get at least one of the other two players who might hold overcards to fold, but a raise would be likely committing me against the player to my left, whose range is either likely either flipping against me or dominating me with a higher pair. Also, perhaps I can hit a set and win a big pot against the player on my right. So I decide to flat call, hoping to hit a set or hit nothing and fold.
Mm-hmm.
Flop comes 6-4 tray rainbow. And our hero says, darn, it's a flop that certainly got me involved. Small blind, donk bets for 5,000 into the pot of 11,000, and now it's on us.
This is horrible, because first of all, even if we decided to call or raise because they're all unders, we still have the under the gun guy who could have a big pair and is going to make us waste money now.
Yep.
So this really sucks. And then, you know, you have to wonder if the donk better is really tricky now. And we've assumed a little too much about him. And he's betting into the both of us. He's not so much worried about us as he is the under-the-gun guy. So he's willing to bet into the under-the-gun guy. Perhaps he picked up the original Super System and saw where Bill Brunson says, hey, that guy's supposed to have a hand. I've hit a set now. I'm going to bet into him and hope he shoves with ace-ace, and I've got a set of sixes or whatever. So
yep.
You don't know what this guy knows. This is pretty scary. I don't think I'm folding, but I don't think I'm raising either. I'm going to call and say, well, if I got to burn 5K here, I've got a ton. He said he was the biggest stack in the room, so 5K is not going to break me.
Yeah.
But this way, what I'm really hoping for is to call. End of the gun had ace king, gets out of the way. Now I have position on this quote recreational player, and we can make better determinations later. For 5K, it's really not that much, so I'm gonna call.
Yeah, so I think you're right. I mean, it is 5K here. We've got an overpair. We don't really know what our recreational player next to us has. It could be very strong. He could just be misjudging the situation. I am much more worried about the player to our left having a real hand and the fact that he has, you know, 30K left and will probably be getting it all in here. So that's what makes it tricky now. It's not just 5K. I mean, I think if we want to continue here, we have to assume that it's going to be for all the other players' chips, which, again, was 30K when he started. So
yeah.
So it's not a 5K decision, really. It's a 30K decision. And so here's the other interesting thing about that. So if we call the 5K, the guy shoves for his whatever the other 20-some thousand he has left. Does our small blind now re-raise? At that point, we have to get out, right? So, mm-hmm. So, but at that point, we've only committed the 5K, right? So that's what makes it interesting. So. So I guess that's why I'm not concerned about putting the 5K in. You know, there's a good chance that we are ahead here. Good chance we are ahead of the player with more chips. And, you know, the only scary thing I think at this point is if the other guy goes all in for 30K and then the small blind just calls that. So then we have to consider what we want to do with that as well.
Yeah.
But again, at that point, I think if two players are willing to put 30K in and we just have the smallest overpair to this board, maybe at that point we can get out. But
we also have the gutter, too. That's one thing is we have the gutter for outs. So we have two sevens and four fives. So we have a decent amount of outs twice here if we can maybe make a call or whatever and then see the turn. And who knows? But, yeah, I'm agreeing with you. I think we're calling.
Alright, our hero says decision 2, call or raise. I don't think folding is an option. I figure the player on my right very likely indicates either a hand with a 6 in it, wanting some protection, or maybe a 5 in it, and he'd rather bet than call. Hands like A6, A5, and 5-6 also seem very reasonable, and it seems like I could reasonably raise for value. As for the under the gun, though, I guess my hand is too strong to fold if he raises anyway, so I figure I should raise. It's likely the under the gun would fold and overpair, but you never know, and perhaps this is one of those rare cases where I can get the better hand to fold and the worst hand to call. I raised to 15K. All right, so this is interesting. I hadn't really thought of it. That makes sense. You know, we were talking about what happens if the guy shoves and then we have to call, but, you know, you can take that action away from him by raising, right?
Well, if you – here's what I said initially was that I'm worried that the guy has a legitimate hand. I sat down at this table, ABC, saying anybody who raises in that position, now you're taking one of four or five hands out of the equation that has to be for us to make this a good move. If it's aces, kings, or queens, he's not folding. He's re-raising and shoving on us. I don't think he's getting out. This guy didn't play this hand under the gun, see a perfect rainbow flop to now get out for a re-raise of 15K. I think the guy puts all of his, what did you say it was, 30? This guy had. So he shoves the rest of it. Now the other guy who wakes up, has a set, now re-raises, and now we've wasted 15K rather than just calling and getting 5. Because let's face it, if the guy does have ace-king under the gun, he's folding to the 5K bet. So you've put 15 out there for what? To get? I don't know. Like I said, Jamie knows way more than I do, but in this case, I feel like I'm wasting money here when I don't need to. But
interesting. Hey, good discussion.
Yeah.
All right, so we did raise the 15K. The under the gun folds, and the small blind calls without too much thought.
Well, I mean, that's good that he got... I don't think the under the gun folded a big hand there, though. I think he had ace-king or ace-queen and just got out.
But then small blind doesn't raise us, so that's what's interesting now, I think. So,
yeah.
Pot now has about 41,000 in it, and the turn is another 4, so that means our board is 6-4 tray 4, and the small blind checks to us.
Well, this is interesting, and I'm just now realizing this is the guy that said, "Here comes Mr. Aggressive," and right. I just wonder if now we were aggressive. And he's letting us just walk the dog. And he's, you know what I mean? Because it's hand of the week, sometimes you lean toward that because you're wondering where people don't often like to come on the show and brag. They legitimately want us to say WTF, you know,
right.
Why the face, as Phil Dunphy would say.
I
don't understand, like in this instance, like the guy just calls our re-raise and now he checks to us. If I was thinking I have a huge hand here and I've already pinned this guy as Mr. Aggressive, and then sure thing, almost the first chance he gets, he shows me his aggressive side. Well, now when the turn comes, I'm going to let him take on the lead when I've got him beat, because I've got what is legitimately an overpair or a straight or something. And so I don't know. It's a little scary. It's a little scary. I think I would check behind for pot control, because really, what am I betting for now? I mean, I'm betting to protect that he doesn't hit a four card straight here with a gutter or something. Am I betting that he doesn't pair the six again and make sixes full? Am I betting because we don't want him to hit his ace king, which he's not sticking around with ace king? So, and he wouldn't have played it. He wouldn't have donked bet with ace king. So I don't know what a bet does here. I just don't know what a bet accomplishes here for me, other than getting the random card in his hand to, if he doesn't have a pair that's beaten us already, to pair, you know, even that, because, you know, to make trips for him, make another boat. So what we're really hoping against here is that he doesn't hit the six again, if he has it. If he has the four, well, then we're screwed, but we don't put him on the four, so it's... This is tough for me. I don't see why I would bet here. I think I would check and get to the river and get value from a hand if I could, and then try to save our stack a little bit. So I think I'd check behind.
Yeah, I think that's what I would do too, and it might be too passive, so I'll be interested to see what happens here. But yeah, we're kind of a little bit lost on what we're up against here, and you're right. It could be a little walking of the dog. It could have been the board pairing scares that player now. But if it scares him and we bet, then we chase him off, right? So I don't know. So it does seem like the more cautious, reasonable play is to check, but also doesn't mean that's the right play. So
right,
I guess
right.
We'll find out what happens. All right, here says the four is not a great card, but much better than seeing an ace, deuce, or six. I'm thinking there's not much reason to slow down, and I might really have this guy on the hook. So I bet 28,000. He really starts thinking and talking a lot and looks to be in a state of genuine indecision as to what to do. The clock actually gets called on him by somebody else at the table. This is still the turn, by the way. He says, I'm thinking he couldn't possibly be thinking this hard with trips or a straight, and I must have him. As the director's counting down 5, 4, 3, 2, he's turned straight, staring straight at me as he reaches to his side to drop in the 28,000 in chips for a call. Pot is now almost 100,000, and he says, I'm planning to shove most river cards for value. The river comes another 4, putting 3 4s on the board, giving me 4s full of 7s. Then the unexpected happens. He insta shoves the river. Wow.
Oh, man. Well, okay, so it's one of two hands. It's not quads, because I think he wants value for that. I don't think he wants to scare us. But maybe. And it could be the 6, and it could be that. But does he really, really want to take a chance on us not having a pair bigger than 6s to make a better boat? So that's scary. I don't know. It's tough for me to call because of what he said. Now he wakes up and bets. He donk bets into us again like he did earlier. Something tells me he's got an overpair, and obviously it's bigger than ours unless he has the other 2 7s. This is scary to me because there's no way he puts us on that 4. And if he did, he wouldn't shove because he knows we can't fold. So I feel like we could be beat here, and not just because it's hand of the week. It's just the way he played it. He called us Mr. Aggressive, and without letting you get off the hook, you know, he shoves on you now because he doesn't want you to check behind. He wants you to put to decision. And I just feel like the way this guy played this hand, you know, he calls a raise, then he bets out on a really innocuous safe board, and then he sees us re-raise later and says, all right, well, I'll just call and let you do the dirty work. And then he did, but then he was kind of confused. Was he acting? Was he watching too many episodes of Rounders? Or did he literally have the best hand here, and now he wakes up and shoves on us, and it was playing tricky? You know, maybe he wasn't as recreational as we thought, or maybe he's just, you know, batshit crazy. I don't know, but it feels like a losing call to me if we call. It just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like we have him beat, you know. He wouldn't do that if he had the straight, because he knows any pair gives somebody a boat, and he knows quads is possible. We could have had ace-4 suited, who knows. So, I don't know. I don't think the 7s are strong enough for me to call here, especially since I was the massive stack in the tournament, and I'm going to give up half my stack to 7s, 4s full of 7s, to a guy that I can't really figure out yet. So, I think I fold here. I really do.
Yeah, part of me really wants to think that he's doing this with a 6, and feels like he improved. But the problem with that is I'm trying to think of what he puts us on at that point, and the only thing I can come up with is what you mentioned, that he called us Mr. Aggressive, and he thinks we're lighter than we really are. Now, I don't know whether shoving at that point is the right move in that case, right? But it's possible you could have an overpair, obviously, which would be bigger than ours. And he was trying to figure out how strong the under the gun was with his donk bet on the flop. And then once that player got out, then he felt more emboldened. So, I mean, here's the other thing, too, is the long thought on the turn. You tend to equate that with weakness, right? As I'm trying to talk myself into calling, when it could have been he was trying to figure out whether he should raise there with a strong hand or whether he should just make the call and see what happens on the river. But if he was doing that, I don't see him shoving the river then, right? I mean, if you're trying to get us to commit our chips, you would check here again, I think. So I don't know. I feel like I'm falling into a trap here, but I'm letting myself believe my 7s are good. But that's a mighty big bet. So
I can see what you're saying. The part about why it took so long, he needed for me to him to put a to have a 6. If he has a 6 in his hand, I don't see him needing the clock if he's worried that we have an over. And then he takes the entire clock and then calls us, then shoves because he's got a boat. So what hand did he put us on that he needed to do that whole thing and make that call? A straight? Did he really put us on a straight? Did he really see us three betting or whatever it was, re-raising, whatever it was earlier in the hand when, you know, he made it 15? And I was just like, I don't know if he sees. There's nothing we're afraid of if we have the straight then. So why aren't we just calling and getting everyone to stick around? When you raise to 15 there, you're trying to get somebody out, which we did. If you had the straight there, the nut straight, if you somehow called a raise preflop with 5-7, you know, or 5-deuce, you know, I mean, you're not raising to get people out. You're hoping these guys just keep betting into you. So he can't put us on the straight there. So what's the long period of time going to be that he needs to have a clock called on him? If he has a six, it's not that hard of a decision, and he's not putting us on a straight. So when the four comes, he's got to think, I hope this guy has the six, and now I'm going to shove with an over pair like tens, and he's going to call with his sixes full of fours full of sixes. I just don't put him on having the six. I have him either bluffing, which I doubt, or having a better hand than us. So I'm folding.
All right, this is gonna be interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Our hero says, "I asked for a count, and it's about 82,000, possibly a little more than I would have estimated looking at his stack. Could he really have a four? That didn't make a lot of sense. Did he have a five and plan on bluffing it if he missed the straight? Did he just have a six for fours full of sixes and was now relieved to be at a straight, and that my chances of holding a four were greatly decreased? I muttered to the table, boy, I might need to have the clock called on me now." That, I would argue, yes, absolutely. I don't really think too long. I figured to trust my original read that his range contained a lot of ace, six, five, six, etc., and I call. He turns over queen, queen. As I muck out of habit, although I was probably supposed to turn my cards over since it was an all-in, someone asked after if it's too late to retrieve my cards, and I just also an overpair to the board. He says, lessons learned. One, obviously I should have given more thought and weight to the chance that I didn't overpair in his range. He might have had the same read on me as about the strength of it under the gun raise, although I guess seeing no ace or king on the flop was good enough for him to start betting. It's not typical players to flat big pairs from the small blind in a $1,700 tournament, but I'd already recognized that he was not quite a typical player. Two, I probably should have given him more credit that he's capable enough to not stack off a reasonably large stack with just top pair. This means I should have given less weight to hands like ace, six, and five, six, at least after the river all in.
Yeah, well, I keep coming back to that whole here comes Mr. Aggressive comment. I feel like he was playing us a little. And he probably only called with the queen, queen, because an under-the-gun player raising in that situation generally should have queens beat or at least have ace-king, and you're flipping. So when you see a safe board.
No ace or no king. Yeah. Bolden, right?
Yep. Now he bets out hoping the Mr. Aggressive, you know, comes alive and then doesn't. So then he's like, all right, well, he came alive. But then he's like, okay, now I've got the guy that I was worried about out, and I got the guy who's really aggressive. Now he's going to take the leash and run with it. And so he plays us, and then I think even maybe the whole countdown crap was all part of the play too. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't there, but maybe the 28K
call. Well, I don't know if it is, but I think at that point he has to wonder when we raised on the flop, right?
On the flop, yeah.
That it's, you know, he had to wonder what we had at that point. You know, he probably was doing a lot of the same gymnastics we did. You know, is it A6, some sort of six that thinks he's good, or is it something bigger? Or did this big blind actually get lucky and flop a straight here, and now I'm worried, right? So when the board paired, that gives you some outs, obviously, to think about. So that could have been what the thinking about was. You know, hey, it's possible that I can catch up if I'm behind, or after more thought, realize that I'm actually still ahead. And then, of course, he got the river card that he needed to feel more confident about that. So,
wow. So I wonder how he did in the tournament after that.
Oh, yeah, he didn't mention. Huh.
Well, like I said, just when you're at a new table, you know, don't automatically, you know, I know you have to quickly assess but you know, I wouldn't put half my stack on that quick assessment. You know, I would kind of be a little more weary of the people. And again, like that under the gun had to have had ace king or ace queen, and we ruled him out. We got him out. And that's what it seemed like. And then from there, it's just wow. You know, I would have definitely checked the turn, and then the river. The guy comes. I don't think the guy shoves on the river if we check the turn, because now we're showing weakness. Now he wants value, and then he might put out a bet of 40 or something, and we can clearly comfortably call, and then find out what this guy had and all this other crap without it costing half our stack. You know, because that's what it did. Basically, it was 130. I think the guy had. We had 270. That's half our stack, basically. Okay.
Still such a big bet on the river, though, for that, right? I mean, there's not too many hands he was worried about at that point.
Yeah, I think he was just...
Kings or the case four are the only hands that...
Well, 100,000 in the pot, and you have 80. You
know what I mean? That's true. Yeah, you're right.
So, I mean, if you're going to bet, you might as well bet your stack.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jamie. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
AnteUp is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.